Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen with the best of 2013, in which we revisit some of the most valuable advice from our guests in the past year.
Staying well is always the goal, but if illness or a chronic condition lands you in a doctor's office or an emergency room, knowing how to effectively communicate what's wrong can mean the difference between a well-thought-out diagnosis and potentially unnecessary procedures and tests.
Dr. Lena Wen is the co-author of When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests.
Dr. Wen, most of us have been patients and are patients. Many of us have had a frustrating experience with a healthcare provider at one time or another. What inspired you to write this book? Was it your experience as an emergency room physician or something more personal?
It was both. As an emergency physician, I see so many patients coming in who are not satisfied by the care that they're getting. But for me, it was a personal experience that specifically inspired this. When I was a medical student, my mother was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer after nearly a year of misdiagnoses. And in that process, I saw how disconnected patients have become from their own medical care. And despite the best intentions from doctors and nurses and the medical system, patients don't feel like they're being listened to and aren't getting the right medical care for them.
In your book, you concretely take us through what patients can be doing to better advocate for themselves, and you list 8 pillars to better diagnosis. The first pillar is tell your whole story. Telling your story is really critical as you see it. Why is this so important?
We know that 80% of diagnoses can be made just based on your history alone. That means that your story is the key to your diagnosis. And actually, that's better than any test or combination of tests that are out there. And yet, so many patients believe that they should tell their symptoms and not their story. But what if the patient instead said, I experienced sharp chest pains when I was walking. I stopped, I took a nitroglycerin pill, and that gave me a headache. Then I became nauseous and I had to sit down. I mean, that would tell the doctor a lot more than just stating the symptoms alone. You have to think through your story, write down your story, and practice it, because we know that doctors interrupt patients in less than 10 seconds. So if you only have 10 seconds to tell that compelling story, you really have to practice it and get the high-impact part of the story out in advance.
The book is When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests. And our guest today, Lena Wen, thank you so very much for joining us on Take Care. Maybe you're already doing everything right for yourself health-wise, but that overall sense of well-being somehow eludes you. Blame it on the follies of youth. When they say, with age comes wisdom, they neglect to mention that happiness is also part of that equation.
This was the finding of Dr. Carl Pillemer of Cornell University. Through the Legacy Project, he collected practical advice from over 1,000 seniors across the U.S. and published the book 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans.
I've been a gerontologist for 25 years, and I hit on what for me was a pretty amazing revelation, or I should say maybe it hit me. Namely, that almost all the research I'd been doing over the years was entirely focused on older people's problems and older people as problems. I realized that it was so problem-focused that I was missing all the advantages of aging and the vibrant folks who are out there who could offer, you know, important contributions and advice to younger people. And I was also hit at the same time by the wave of research showing that older people are actually happier than younger people. People in their 70s beyond, even though they have a burden of chronic illness and they've experienced a lot of loss, are actually happier than younger people. So I stopped and asked myself, basically, what's that all about? And is there some way that we could learn what it is that older people know about having a happy, healthy, or more successful life that younger people don't?
Well, what is your conclusion about why older people might be generally happier than younger people?
One of the things that we know about people as they enter their 70s and beyond is something different happens to them. they become acutely aware of their limited time horizon. Interestingly, that doesn't make old people depressed as much as it makes them make better choices. So it hit me, why do we have to wait till we're 70 and beyond to understand that?
I imagine, Dr. Pillemer, that although senior citizens know these lessons because they've lived them, they've taken them to heart, they may not have articulated them. So can you share some of that best advice?
I think there are a group of lessons, three or four, which constitute what you might call the elder lens on life. One thing which we heard from almost everyone, and people said it, by the way, either really or metaphorically, pounding their fist on the tables. And those three words are life is short. A 99-year-old said, I don't know what happened because the next thing you know, you're 100. And so a lot of their lessons emanate from that. A big surprise for me in this study was how many people said, choose work for its intrinsic rewards, its sense of purpose and its value to you, and not for the money.
In terms of what you should spend your time on then, were there any universal declarations that the elders provided?
I think I can sum it up in one sentence. The elder view is as you look back over your life, people and experiences are going to trump things in almost every situation in life. Now, they don't want you to be a starving artist, and they were clear about this. Their argument is, time spent earning more money than it takes to be comfortable is probably a waste of time. If I have time for one more, I'll give you one last one.
Sure.
One of the pieces of advice I found most helpful in the entire project is in giving advice for how to deal with a marital argument. A number of people said the following. What you need to do is figure out who the issue is most important to and basically let that person decide. So I think there are tips like that, which I personally have found very helpful and would like to gather more.
The book is 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. Dr. Carl Pillemer, thank you so much for joining us on Take Care. Given the fact that our guests have dedicated their professional lives to preventing and treating disease in mind and body, we couldn't help but be curious about their own personal approach to staying healthy.
That's when the segment One Thing was born. At the end of our interviews, we started asking our guests for the one thing they do every day for their well-being. Here's a sampling of what they said in 2013.
One of the biggest things that I do to stay healthy in my life is to make sure I start every day with breakfast, which is the most important meal of the day, actually breaking your fast from overnight. My breakfast that I enjoy most is just a dish of plain oatmeal. I make it with fat-free milk. I add some chopped walnuts, which are heart healthy, and some chopped up fresh fruits or berries that add some sweetness. And in this type of breakfast, I've incorporated most of the food groups. Gives me a lot of energy to start my day right, and it's just an enjoyable meal.
The most important thing as you get older in life is regular activity, even a brisk walk for 20 minutes every day. Certainly the diet is important as well, but a brisk walk, I personally play tennis virtually every day for 2 hours, and I feel like it's not only improving the quantity of my life, but the quality of my life as well, and I have the data to support that it improves the quantity of life.
I meditate. I don't do 20 minutes. I do what is basically called a meditation check-in, and periodically throughout the day, I basically sit back, I take a deep breath, and I just sort of check in with my body, and I check in with my surroundings, and if I can do it in my garden, it's even better, because I check in with my garden, and that's one of the ways that I use to reduce stress.
I walk my dogs, and I think they are absolutely the best exercise coach you could ever have because they do everything that we now advise people to do in terms of a workout. They go hard for a few minutes, then they stop for a few minutes, they go hard again, they look all around and enjoy the sunshine, they enjoy the trails, and they make me do all of that every single day. I heartily recommend walking your dog.
The one thing I do just about every day is I exercise, and it's not a very exotic or unusual activity to suggest to others, but I pretty much every day, my wife kids me that it's like brushing my teeth. It's part of my routine, whether before work or after work. Usually it's in the basement with an elliptical and a recumbent bike and a treadmill. I have one of each in the basement we've had for years and years, and every day I trudge down there, like it or not, and work out.
Starting from the top, we heard from dietitian Joan Rogus on eating a healthy breakfast, aspirin expert Dr. Charles Hennekins on regular exercise, former Prevention magazine editor Denise Foley on meditation, New York Times writer Gretchen Reynolds on walking her dogs, and Harvard professor Dr. Robert Schmerling on exercise.
Whether it involves medicine, science, public policy, human behavior, or mental health, our goal is to cover a wide variety of topics that enhance our health and wellness.
Two perspectives that influence the show are our behind-the-scene members of the Take Care production team, but they're front and foremost in our appreciation. Our thanks go to engineer and editor Leah Landry and executive producer Catherine Loper.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Catherine. We couldn't do it without you.
The interview segments heard on today's show were produced and edited by Leah Landry. Links to the episodes containing the full interviews are available on the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. And past episodes are always available on iTunes. Just search out Take Care under podcasts.
On next week's show, we investigate clinical trials, the testing of drugs in controlled studies involving human participants, which makes so many medical advances possible. Plus, we go nuts and learn why snacking on almonds, walnuts, and other nuts has been linked to a reduced risk of chronic diseases.
We thank you for spending this half hour with us today and throughout the year. Like you, we've learned so much about improving our physical, mental, and emotional health. And Linda and I want to wish you a year of wellness in 2014.
If you have any questions or comments about anything you've heard today or in the past, or if you have topics you'd like to see covered in 2014, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website.
I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.